Hi, I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. After 121 days in Juneau, state lawmakers have concluded their work. That's after passing dozens of bills and finalizing the state's operating budget for the fiscal year that begins this July. Lawmakers also passed bills that they say will address a number of pressing issues, from high energy costs and declining Cook Inlet natural gas production to uncertainty in the homeschool system brought on by a recent court ruling, Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
The second regular session of the 33rd Alaska Legislature is done. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, says he's proud of what he and his colleagues in the bipartisan majority caucus accomplished.
It's been a pretty successful 2 years, I believe, in so many ways, whether it's in the budget issues that our committees have been working on, whether it's in energy or in education, all of those areas we've worked forward and made some great successes.
Let's get this out of the way first. The budget, if signed into law by the governor, would provide Alaskans a payment of roughly $1,650 this fall. That's what lawmakers call a 75-25 PFD, meaning it's 25% of the state's annual drawdown on the permanent fund. But unlike many prior years, the budget was not the focus of the last day of the session. Instead, lawmakers spent their final hours racing to pass bills tackling a wide array of pressing issues. One of those is correspondence education. A judge ruled in April that two laws making that type of homeschool possible unconstitutionally sent state money to private schools. Lawmakers inserted language outlining a temporary fix into another education-related bill that would require schools to carry opioid overdose reversal drugs. Nikiski Republican Senator Jesse Bjorkman says it's aimed at ensuring homeschooling under the state's correspondence school programs can continue.
It gives some certainty and surety that our Alaskan families, Mr. President, that value their freedom and their educational choice can use those homeschool allotment monies as they have for a decade.
The language approved by the House and Senate would require the Education Department to monitor and report to the legislature how homeschool allotments are spent, at least for the next year. Declining Cook Inlet gas production and rising energy costs were also a focus of the session. Lawmakers declined to cut royalty rates on Cook Inlet production, with senior senators saying they weren't convinced it would move the needle by much. Instead, lawmakers created a reserve-based lending program within the state's Industrial Development Agency and tasked the state's utility regulator with regulating the price of gas storage. Renewables also got a major boost in some other bills. But will it be enough to keep energy prices down? House Speaker Kathy Tilton, a Wasilla Republican, said residents shouldn't expect immediate relief, but she said she's optimistic.
You know, I'm not sure they're going to see a reduction in their energy rates right away, but I think that over time there will be a reduction in the energy rates, and I know that that is our goal, is to be able to provide low-cost energy throughout the state.
Several high-profile bills did not make it across the finish line, including that royalty relief for natural gas producers in Cook Inlet and a controversial elections bill that saw a late push for passage. Tilton says she expects lawmakers to continue to work on royalty relief proposals before the next legislative session. Like the Senate president, Tilton says legislators took great strides on a wide array of issues this session.
Oh, I think it was a great session. There was a lot of things that were taken care of. We've taken care of energy. We've taken some starts in energy. We were able to take care of the correspondence folks. We had a great crime bill that we passed. So I think it was a great session. We got a lot done for people of Alaska.
The Senate adjourned just before midnight. The House kept going until after 1 a.m. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
Injured commercial fishermen and boat owners in Alaska will now be able to access higher insurance reimbursements, thanks to Senate Bill 93, which was signed into law last month. KDLL's Riley Board has this story.
The bill was sponsored by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, which Nikiski Republican Senator Jesse Bjorkman chairs. It concerns the Fisherman's Fund, which was established pre-statehood as a service to commercial fishermen who are injured while fishing. It's funded by fees from commercial fishing licenses. Here's Bjorkman.
The Alaska Fishermen's Fund reimburses licensed commercial fishermen and boat owners for their out-of-pocket medical costs if they have been injured or have a qualifying illness while fishing offshore or doing fishing-related work onshore.
In 2023, the council that oversees the fund requested the maximum payout be raised from $5,000 to $10,000 to better match the insurance deductibles of many vessel owners. Fishermen requested raising that number to $15,000, which Senate Labor and Commerce adopted.
Even with the $15,000 maximum, the projected disbursements from the fund leave the balance still very stable.
This is Bjorkman's staffer Laura Ashe explaining the bill in March 2023.
And so it becomes a philosophical question in a situation in which a fund is created to serve a population, finding that balance between keeping the fund itself healthy, but not allowing disbursements from the fund to serve the balance of the fund more than they serve the population that the fund was intended to serve.
The bill was also designed to incentivize boat owners to get protection and indemnity, or P&I, insurance policies. Representatives from the state's Division of Workers' Compensation, which oversees the Fisherman's Fund, testified that the rate of reimbursements over the past several years shows it would be sustainable to increase the maximum payout. During public testimony, Tracy Welch with trade group United Fishermen of Alaska expressed support for the bill.
As you've heard from staff, the fund is very healthy. It's paid for by fishermen and for fishermen. And this is a great chance for us to be able to help those fishermen who are seeing a high increase in their deductibles. We were talking this afternoon and some vessel owners are seeing $10,000, $15,000 for deductibles. So this is a way to help them out and to provide a little bit of incentive for them to hold insurance on their P&I insurance for their boats and their crew.
In addition to raising the reimbursement ceiling, the bill also adds viral illnesses to the list of issues eligible for payouts. The bill had another hearing in Labor and Commerce and in the corresponding House Committee. It passed the Senate unanimously in May 2023, then reached the House floor this session, where it passed 39-1. Governor Mike Dunleavy signed the bill April 23rd, and it took effect immediately. In a press release last month, Bjorkman said he was grateful the bill had been signed into law and reiterated it should have no financial impact on the state. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
One of the bills that crossed the finish line in the final hours of the legislature is what advocates for missing and murdered Indigenous people are calling a major milestone. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, it's a crime bill that addresses a statewide elephant in the room.
The bill was launched by Senator Donnie Olson, an Inupiaq and a Democrat from Golovin, but it was Representative C.J. McCormick who shepherded the bill in the House.
I want to be sure that I convey that this epidemic is impacting every region of the state, urban, rural, and in between.
McCormick, a Democrat from Bethel, said Senate Bill 151 is a long overdue response to those who have cried out for the state to address the crisis of missing and murdered Alaska Natives, a cause, he says, that goes well beyond the list of names.
There's individuals that I went to school with. My staffer who helped work on this bill has family members that are a part of these lists as well. I'm sure there's members of this body who even have family members that are a part of this list.
Alaska has the fourth highest rate of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in the nation. And Anchorage is the third highest among cities. But the bill aims to reduce these numbers in several ways. It sets aside money for the Department of Public Safety to hire two permanent MMIP investigators to focus on unsolved cases. It requires police training to include cultural education, and it creates a 9-member commission to review unresolved MMIP cases statewide. Charlene Opuk says these policies have been years in the making.
For advocates and for families, this is a huge moment for us.
Opuk, who is director of Data for Indigenous Justice, says a few years ago, it was a struggle to get appointments with state leaders to even discuss the issue. But today, those leaders and other groups have come together to champion this cause. She says the best part is that Alaska Natives helped to build this coalition by tapping into their traditional values, which focus on building relationships and using the power of storytelling to get their message across.
And as we carried those stories, collected the data, and said it over and over and over again, and then we have our collective voices, that's the power of that. That changes from being just a situation that happened one-off to a collective truth that cannot be denied.
The bill did not pass unanimously. Representative David Eastman, a Wasilla Republican, cast the lone no vote. He questioned the need for cultural training and says he's concerned the bill could place additional burdens on police. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And in Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you for listening.